join us and live in peace, or pursue your present course and face obliteration, we will be waiting for an answer. These are the final words spoken by an alien who was sent to Earth to open up new relationships on behalf of the galaxy. These are the important and echoing words of the day the Earth stood still. It was 1951, just 6 years after the U.S. dropped atomic weapons on the world for the first time. The Cold War was ratcheting up quite quickly. Arsenals were being stockpiled. Technology was in rapid development, and tensions were high. It was into this environment that the day the Earth stood still was released, a definitive and amazing sci-fi film. Yet none of the flashy special effects of today's sci-fi movies, this film had to stand on its own with a story that captivated. It begins as so many sci-fi movies do, as a flying saucer lands, and from it emerges a visitor from another planet. Now, of course, this is met with fear and terror, which, not completely irrational, I get that, but they lead to misunderstanding and conflict. In fact, in one early moment in the movie, our visitor, who has brought with him a communications device that will allow Earth to speak throughout the galaxy and listen to voices from other places, that gift is destroyed, shot out of his hand by people who are uncertain as to what he is doing. He has come with the hope that he might help humanity understand that we are a part of something far bigger than ourselves, that we might realize our actions have interplanetary consequences. It is worth enjoying the full unfolding of this story by watching the film. But the critical plot line for you to follow is this. Now that the Earth has atomic weapons and rockets capable of reaching outside our atmosphere, the other beings that exist across the universe have decided they must intervene so they might maintain galactic peace, because Earth is now a threat. Peace, they worry that Earth could easily disrupt with our newfound power and capability. Now, even though our guest, an alien named Klaatu, has arrived in a flying saucer with an indestructible robot, no one will listen to him. He speaks with the authority of the galaxy, and no one will listen. So he sneaks away from the testing and the imprisonment they force upon him, and he finds his way to the home of an academic who hears truth in his words. And this academic encourages him to try something new, a demonstration of power that might help the world listen. And thus we arrive at the scene that gives the movie its name. Klaatu, in all of his alien power, causes all energy and power across the globe to cease for 30 minutes. All around the Earth, all power freezes. Every outlet, every engine, every motor, every battery, everything that is a source of power simply stops. Except for hospitals and planes in flight, because honoring and caring for life is one of Klaatu's foremost thoughts. He brings the entire world to a halt. The Earth stood still. It was his hope that this moment of silence, this demonstration of power, would bring the world's leaders to a place of listening. Instead, they kill him. Don't worry, his alien robot brings him back from the dead, at least for a little while at the end of the film. The biblical pairings for this film are plentiful. You see, the role of prophets throughout our scriptures, and there are a lot of prophets in our scriptures, their role was to do exactly what Klaatu did. That is, point out the consequences of a group's current behaviors that, if not changed, will bring about consequences. In this way, the prophets in our Bible are far less like fortune readers or crystal ball glancers. Instead, they're more like parents who look at someone and say, "If you don't knock that off, there's going to be a problem." This is the role of the prophet. This was the voice of Klaatu in the movie. In fact, as I think of our prophets who do this for the people of Earth, I think of Jonah and his trip to Nineveh. He goes to Nineveh, after some reluctance, to remind the city that they must change or they will be doomed. He wanders through the streets speaking this invitation. Now, the kicker is the city of Nineveh actually changes, and Jonah gets upset. He really wanted to see them punished. He thought he was so much better, and he was really going to enjoy the fire and the brimstone. In fact, he's so upset that they changed and God forgives them, he wanders to the outside of town to pout. It's in the Bible. And he's sitting there pouting at the edge of town, and so God basically has to weave in some amazing little interactions and stories too, if you'll put it this way. God basically gives Jonah a time out to think about his own actions and consequences. Now, I find this especially ironic because at the beginning of the story, God already had to give Jonah a time out inside of a fish for not listening the first time. Twice in Jonah's story, God has to make him stop to really think. He thinks he's thinking until God causes him to take a break. And in those moments of reflection, better decisions are made. Because God knows, like us, Jonah must still his heart and mind to truly find bearing in life and make wiser decisions. Much like our movie, interestingly enough, the story of Jonah was written as a fictional account to give people something to think about. For all the folks that want to take the Bible literally, they forget that some of the books were written literally as fiction. The book of Jonah is one of these. Much like we turn to a movie to look for a message, so they turn to a fictional allegory of a guy getting swallowed by a fish and thrown up in Nineveh to share a word of warning. The story teaches us something. Now, there are certainly some strong prophetic themes throughout the day the earth stood still, but we also can find great connection to the life of Jesus. I mean, think about this with me. A visitor from out of this world comes to bring a message of peace, but instead is persecuted by political powers of the day. And then when Klaatu dies and ends up returning from dead, the comparison gets a little heavy-handed. You can see what the scriptwriters were going for here. You see, the life of Jesus was a life that challenged the assumptions and choices of his day. And we find that in the biggest moments of change and challenge, when we read through our scriptures and the gospel story, whenever there was a giant moment in Jesus' life or ministry, it usually concludes with the phrase, "And then Jesus went off alone to pray." Or right before a momentous moment, before a big decision or a big change, we again find the words, "And Jesus went off alone to pray." The idea of stilling ourselves to enter places of wisdom. Now, sometimes when I preach from movies, folks often ask, well, do you even use the Bible or do you just use the movies? So I just want a quick highlight for you. Today, our scriptures are the entire book of Jonah and the life of Jesus as told in all four gospels. And now we're swinging through the Psalms. Are you ready? Here we go. Psalm 46:10. Well, that's at least in English. In other translations, like French or Norwegian, it's actually numbered differently and is 46:11. And this had been quite overlooked by many people until 2 weeks ago, when some United Methodist leaders were sitting at a table together, an international gathering. They were trying to pick a Bible verse theme for the General Conference of the United Methodist Church taking place next year. In 2020, United Methodists from all over the world are going to gather in the Twin Cities and try to figure out how we move forward as God's people. And they thought, we need a Bible verse. True. We also are going to need a lot more than a Bible verse. But they figured we need a theme, and our theme could be, "Know that I am God." Oh, that's a great theme. And it's just, let's all turn our Bibles to Psalm 46:10 and look at the scripture together. And the folks from Norway went, "I don't got that." And they realized it's numbered differently. But turns out that was just the beginning of the differences. So though some of the verses might be numbered differently in different languages, that wasn't the biggest problem. As this international group all pulled out their own personal Bibles, they noticed something in the actual translation of the verse. Many of us might know it, "Be still and know that I am God." Well, the Methodist News Service actually summarized this very well. Where English speakers see the words, "be still," in Norwegian, the translation says something closer to, "shut up." The German Bible says, "make peace." And in Portuguese, it says, "stop fighting." And the Common English Bible, the United Methodist Publishing House's most recent translation from the original texts, has its own take on Psalm 46:10. In that translation, God declares, "That's enough." That's enough indeed. I tell you, in a denomination where it often feels like we're talking past one another in the midst of disagreements, the invitation to experience the presence of the divine is literally being interpreted differently. But I do appreciate these variety of options. As I look around a world that is far too often violent, as I consider the polarization and arguing that are taking place instead of conversation and relationship, as I listen to what used to be racist dog whistles that have now become audible foghorns, as I am bombarded with hateful and ignorant stereotypes and judgments, as people run circles and do backflips around logic and morality to try to justify children being separated from their families, it all seems to keep getting louder and louder, and my phone keeps telling me there's another breaking news alert and something else has happened. That's enough. Enough! Shut up! Stop fighting! Make peace! Be still! I welcome every single one of these translations and the wisdom they offer. In fact, hearing that breadth of all they can mean serves for me the same impact as something out of this world arriving to disrupt our everyday motion and busyness. These words beckon us to stand still amidst a world that will not. That we might be still in our hearts and in our minds long enough to remember that actions do have consequences. Our personal actions, our communal actions, our denominational actions, our national actions, there are consequences. And this is not a threat. It's just the natural course of life. But far too often, we do not stop to think about what those consequences will be or who they will affect. Amidst the cacophony and the chaos, we aren't able to adequately discern what those consequences will be and if we are willing to accept them. And no, we can't make the world stop. The clock will continue to tick, and lives will continue to be in motion all around us. But we can pause ourselves. We can invite those around us to join us in such moments of awareness. We can bring a moment of stillness into our lives, even though there will be sounds all around us and activity around every corner. We can still bring a stillness to our being in the midst of all of it. And we can make a choice for our living. In fact, that's the only choice we get to make, how we will act and how we will be. Will we be able and willing to reach a place of stillness, to be aware and to listen? For much like the people in the movie, we may not get another warning. We may have already ignored the prophets who have wandered our streets. We may already crucified the divine messengers inviting us to see and be a part of God's kingdom. And as I reflect on this, those words of a black and white film from 60 years ago spoken by an alien ring in my ears. Join us and live in peace. Or pursue your present course and face obliteration. It's not a threat, but it is a prophetic promise. We will be waiting for your answer.